When Megatron disappeared after that suspicious orbital explosion, the Decepticons were left without leadership, and Starscream stepped in to take command. When Megatron was defeated by the Combaticons, Starscream was prepared to lead. And that one time when Megatron left for 2 whole hours to get some smokes, he says, Starscream once again ignored the personal risks and stood ready to proclaim himself ruler of the Decepticons. Megatron, unreliable, inconsistent, and just plain incompetent. It's time for new leadership. It's time for Starscream.
It is time for action and not words. I am the leader of the future. I am Starscream, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Starscream. This is the Sarcastic Voyage Podcast. Episode 135, featuring Ron Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, and the Sarcastic Voyage unpaid voice acting players.
Yes, hi.
Hello, everybody. What a wonderful time to see you all.
Yeah, what?
Welcome to the most joyful episode of the Sarcastic Voyage ever.
I am not promising that.
I'm Matt Robotham, and I'm damn pleased to see you.
Are you? What is this? What happened? Did you take the wrong pills, Matt? What's going on here?
I'm trying something new where I'm dynamic. This is my dynamic voice.
Well, very well then. You're talking tall, crouching tall, and so forth.
And eating a burrito tall.
Yes. Where to begin?
Has my voice distracted you, Al?
It has a bit. I had a list of things I was going to smoothly transition from the first to the next. And now I don't know what the fuck's going on, Matt. Plus, you're making me affect a strange tone of voice.
Well, you don't have to. Only I need to speak in this voice.
You sound like the happiest man in town.
Oh, no thanks. He's talking about himself, but thanks for looking.
why don't we begin with our favorite Star Trek actor, Walter Koenig.
Walter Koenig.
This is a quest that a few of you may be aware that I've been on for a while now, and I feel like I've been sitting on this joke for so long, and it's time maybe to share this.
Yeah, there have been so many times I've accidentally almost made a reference to this, and I had to catch myself at the last minute.
The thing is, I really wanted to have this at Emerald City, because we're doing a panel on the Post-Atomic Horror. We're doing a live show, and it would have been great to have some sort of tangentially related Star Trek thing to show, you know, sort of a show-and-tell thing, but I don't know that it's going to happen. Let me take you back. A few weeks ago, our friend Rich, who we follow on Twitter, good friend of the show and local Seattleite, mentions that Walter Koenig wrote a sci-fi book in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. As anyone who's been involved in a science fiction show does when they're struggling for money.
Absolutely.
Hey, I got these nerds looking at me. Why don't I write a book? They would say.
Yep. Let's see Tech War.
Yes, see all of those Star Trek books that the Reeve Stevenses wrote for Shatner.
Mm-hmm. See both I Am Spock and I Am Not Spock.
No, you got the order backwards there. He wasn't Spock and then he was Spock.
Oh, that's right. And Spock Shrug?
Spock Shrugged?
Yes. There's a picture. It doesn't even have a title. It's just a picture of Leonard Nimoy on the cover shrugging.
Oh, I was picturing Ayn Rand's Spock Shrugged.
Oh my god, that would be awesome too.
Which is about the principles of libertarianism filtered through Vulcan logic.
Yes, of course. It's got a picture of Spock on the cover holding a globe.
Yeah, exactly. No, but Walter Koenig, he published a book in, I believe, 1988 called Buck Alice and the Actor Robot. Which, okay, worst title I've ever heard.
Uh-huh.
Well, worst title I've ever heard from Walter Koenig. Remember, I'm married to a woman who owns books like What Ho Magic. and Chicks in Chainmail. Now, I thought when she mentioned that title to me, I thought it was Chainmail, Chicks in Chainmail. That's not that bad. No, it's Chicks and Chained Males, like mm-hmm. M-A-L-E, which
listen,
is way worse.
Listen, Walter Koenig may get up to some retarded book titles, but your wife reads supernatural fantasy literature. There's really no contest.
Now, to clarify, she reads everything. She's reading some classic literature, I think Jane Austen or something like that. So, I mean, you know, it's not only the garbage.
No, but she does read what we have termed as, and we'll be getting back to this later, lesbian werewolf porn.
Oh, yes. Yeah, this is going to be a very werewolf-heavy episode, in case you were wondering. But, Matt, you've recently visited my home, and you know, we have various bookshelves, as anyone who owns a lot of books do. And there is one giant bookshelf in our bedroom, which can then be behind a closed door. That's where she puts the regrettable titles in case we have company over that she actually cares what they think.
Uh-huh.
She can close the door. They don't have to see What Ho Magic and Chicks in Chain Mails. But the thing is, because it's in the bedroom, when there's light in the room and I'm lying in bed, I can see those titles.
And just stare at them.
They stare at me. They mock me.
Hell!
I should be reading. I should be watching TV. There's a number of things I could be looking at in the room, but they always draw my eye. And I always notice a new one every time. And it's just like, oh, God.
Hell! You could be reading about a werewolf having sex with a chick who's got chainmail on.
Yeah, there's no chance I'm reading those, but the titles.
It would fall off the shelf and open, and then you would stare into it. I picture you with one of these books up in the attic that you apparently have, reading it a la Neverending Story. Riding around on a giant naked chick in chainmail going, yeah!
And then I yell the incomprehensible name of my mother that you have to turn on the subtitles to understand. My mom's name is Kim, so that's...
Oh, well, that'll be easy. That'll be much easier to make out.
Right. Don't make out with my mom, please.
So,
Walter Koenig, he's published this book, and Rich mentions to me the reason he knows this is because he's laid hands on a copy of this book, and he wishes he bought it. And the reason is, on the back cover, there's apparently a pull quote, the only pull quote, and it says, in its entirety, quote, Walter has written a book, Leonard Nimoy. Now, I gotta tell you, it's been a little stressful the last few weeks. We're putting stuff together for Emerald City. My job's a little hectic at the moment. Things are a little crazy. I sometimes have a moment where I pause and I'll just think, Walter has written a book. And I just start giggling. This is currently, in all caps, the funniest thing I have heard recently.
I mean, I've seen some bad cover blurbs, and I've seen some cover blurbs that have clearly been edited, so like...
Oh, sure.
With the use of ellipses, so that it looks like a good review, but Walter has written a book.
Yeah.
Has got to be the best cover quote ever.
Now, here's the thing. Rich has given me verification. I have no reason to mistrust Rich, and he says he's seen it. He didn't buy it,
mm-hmm.
but he's seen it. I did a Google search, and at least one website has heard of this as well.
Yeah, I was looking, and I saw a similar thing.
Yeah, where this is this whole review about how it's the worst sci-fi book ever written, and they cite that.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll provide a link to the show notes in the show notes for that, because that it's just a fun thing to read anyway.
It needs to be seen to be believed.
But here's where it gets weird. So I figured, like I said, we'll do our live show in Emerald City, and I'll have a copy of this book, and Matt and I could do a little banter about it on stage, and then we could show people mm-hmm. and get a good laugh out of it. So I ordered a copy, and I'm not going to, you know, first of all, there's a reprint edition from like 2006, which Amazon actually had their, you know, have a look at this book before you buy it thing.
Sure.
You'd actually see the back cover, and it's got this very nice, gracious quote from Nimoy on it now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, that's not the one I want.
Walter's
I want the one from 1988.
A good book.
Yeah. No, it's like Walter has taken an actually, the copy that I have now, unfortunately, has this. A wry and insightful look at human behavior, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay, whatever. And that seems more like something Nimoy would actually say, because mm-hmm. he's actually a nice guy, and, you know, he probably wouldn't say Walter has written a book and leave it at that. What I think happened is, I think the publisher fucked up. I think the entire quote started with Walter has written a book, and somebody inadvertently closed the quotes, and that was it, and nobody caught it. Because the copy that I have is from 1988, and it doesn't have that. I think there's probably an early printing that has that mistake in it. And I haven't found it yet.
No, and I'm sure it's worth quite a bit. Because good Lord.
I haven't found any references to that, and I hope that's not the case. I hope bookstores don't know that. Because what happened was I didn't want to buy a new one because I don't want Walter Koenig to have my money because he's fucking Walter Koenig. But also, because I'm not going to read this thing. It's just it's a goof. I just want it for the laugh. So I went to half.com, which is where I buy used stuff, and I bought a used copy. It was like 75 cents, so fine. And a couple days go by, and then the order gets canceled. Sorry, we thought we had it. We don't. It was one of those big book warehouse places.
Oh, sure. That used to happen to me all the time.
No, that's totally, you know, we went to the shelf, and it's not there.
Yeah.
Somebody moved it. Somebody stole it. We sold it and didn't log it. Whatever. That happens. Fine. So I ordered another one, and it happened again. And I'm talking to Matt, and I'm talking to Gav and a couple other people, and a theory starts forming, which is that Walter Koenig is buying up the copies of this book. Because this is shameful and he doesn't want anyone to know it. I'm going to try this once more because there's tons and tons of copies and they're all under a buck. I got to luck out one time. So third time's a charm. And I buy it and it takes 4 or 5 weeks to get here, which it's fine. I ordered it media mail, which I don't think you have that in Canada. But
no, we do.
You know, it's a great thing where books are heavy. So it's cheap postage for shipping them and they just take a while. I used to work in logistics and shipping, and basically what it means is when the truck gets full, they'll ship it.
Yeah.
So sometimes it could be a couple days, sometimes it could be a couple weeks, who knows. But I finally get it, and it doesn't have the quote on it. So now I'm in a position where I could try again, I guess. I could end up with a whole house full of these things.
None of which have the correct quote on them.
Or I could make an appeal to the audience and say, if you happen to be at a used bookstore, you happen to be browsing books, and if you see a copy of Buck Allison, the Actor Robot by Walter Koenig.
By Walter Koenig.
And it has that quote on the back, and it just says, Walter has written a book. Leonard Nimoy. Buy it. I will reimburse you times two.
Yes.
I will pay you double plus shipping.
Yes.
Like, if they charge a buck, I will give you $2 for your trouble.
What I'd really like to have seen is a quote reading, Walter has written a book?
Now, see, I like it the way it is. Actually, the way Rich originally remembered it, until we did a little further research, Rich thought the quote was, Walter has apparently written a book. I think that would be the best of all.
I love that just because, like, okay, I guess, I haven't read it, but...
I picture his assistant coming up. You got a script for Star Trek. It would have been 88, so like Star Trek 6. It would have been 5. Put that aside. We'll do with that later. You have this that they want a cover blurb for. Huh. Walter's apparently written a book. Is that what you want to go with? Yeah, what the hell?
You know what? I don't care.
Fine.
It's Walter, for God's sake.
Is George and Michelle doing anything good? DeForest doing anything good? I don't fucking care about that guy. So, yeah, Walter has written a book. And what I'd like to do is, I don't think Nimoy's at Emerald City this year, unfortunately.
No.
But George Takei is.
Yes.
And I think it wouldn't be too far removed to hand this to him, have a brief conversation where I explain to him why it's funny, because he'll know. He's got a great sense of humor, and he's worked with these guys for years. He'll get it.
Oh, totally.
And get him to sign it. That would give me an excuse. That would give me an in to talk to George Takei, because I never know what to say to people
at
these things. But if I handed him that, I imagine him reading it, laughing in that great voice, and of course I'll sign this.
I would love to sign Walter's book.
I think I've been to enough conventions to know how to spell Algar. So that's what's
to
going on.
To Al. Apparently Walter has written a book.
But see, then if we talk about that for a minute and the line's not too long, maybe we'll ease him into the tripping balls thing.
Yes.
Hope springs eternal.
And of course, I would like to give him a copy of the book.
Well, yes, obviously. That's the other thing. I might just walk up to him with that, but that might be a little arrogant. I don't know. We'll see how that
goes. I'm sure people give him stuff all the time. I don't know if I'd expect him to read it, but...
Well, that's true. Fair enough.
These guys really don't like Chekhov. That's fine. Neither do I.
Or we could get him to sign it and then maybe start getting the other guys to sign it, too.
That would be cool.
I'm not really into that, but some people are.
Yeah.
I guess.
There's not a whole lot of Trek guys that I'd actually
I mean, you know, DeForest Kelly's dead. And...
Yeah, him and Nimoy are about the only ones left that I actually want to meet and talk to. Mm-hmm. And maybe Nichelle Nichols, but I get the feeling she's there on sufferance. She doesn't really care.
No.
Anyway.
Well, she did do that fan film.
Well, that is true, but, you know, she did need a sandwich.
I guess that's also true.
When you're running, when your sandwich light is running low, when it says, you know, sandwich nearly empty, then you gotta work.
Red Wizard needs sandwich badly.
Yes, exactly. Red Communications Officer.
Well, yes. And yellow, briefly.
Yes. All right, and with that, we're going to play some bits, and we're going to come back and talk about werewolves, so stick around.
Yep.
I got this for you to celebrate our 1 month anniversary.
Oh! A watch! It's beautiful!
I knew you'd like a watch when I saw it.
Did you say Watchman?
No!
I drew the Watchman, you know.
I know, Dad. Me and Barbara are trying to be alone.
I remember Alan Moore would say to me,
"Is your dad okay?"
Oh yeah, he doesn't shut up, but he can be useful. Oh, Dad, Alan Moore called.
I knew he would eventually!
Yeah, he wanted a tuna melt on rye. Sure, bring it to me and I'll give it to him.
Will do.
That's awful. I can't stand warm tuna. I'll have a cheese salad.
Megatron once concocted a plan to pull our homeworld into Earth's orbit, to the severe detriment of Decepticons on both planets. He also tried to recruit into our elite ranks a ninja robot, constructed by a human. And who can forget his so-called master plan? You know, the one where we all put on masks and pretended to be Autobots? It's time for new leadership. It's time for straightforward plans. It's time for Starscream.
I promise that under a Starscream administration, we will never dig to the Earth's molten core.
Starscream. A leader who makes sense with plans that make sense. Paid for by Starscream.
It's new feature time here on Sarcastic Voyage.
That's right, Al. You know, if there's one thing the internet loves, it's taking two entirely unrelated entertainment properties and combining them with hilarious results.
Add to this the fact that thinking of new sketch ideas is hard.
Well, let's face it, Al. Sketch comedy is a dead art. We're beating a dead horse here.
We were beating a dead horse. But now we have this baby, the Wheel of Mashups. For those of you who can't see it,
I think that pretty much describes everyone who isn't us.
Shh! For those of you who can't see it, we've installed a giant Price is Right-style wheel, the face of which is covered in literally hundreds of pop culture references. We will each spin the wheel and then write a sketch combining the two things. Matt, you go first.
All right, I'll just take a pull at this. Wow, that's heavier than I thought.
Yeah, it's a bit weighty.
Ah, there we go.
There it goes. It's slowing down. And it's landed on... Super Mario Brothers.
Hey, awesome!
Well, technically it landed on Doki Doki Panic, but same difference. All right, now it's my turn. Round and round and round it goes.
What the hell are you doing?
Carnival barking.
Well, stop it.
Not yet, I just spotted a rube.
And it stopped on The Godfather.
Super Mario Brothers and The Godfather. Here we go!
Super Mario Puzo presents Francis Ford Coppola's The God Bowser.
Now you listen to me, my Kraut turtle friend. Toad never gets that movie. That part is perfect for him. It'll make him a big star. And I'm gonna run him out of the business. And let me tell you why. Toad ruined one of the Mushroom Kingdom's most valuable proteges. For 5 years we had her under training, flying lessons, swimming lessons, eating mushrooms and getting sort of big lessons. I spent hundreds of thousands of coins on her. I was going to make her a big invincibility star. And let me be even more frank, just to show you that I'm not a hard-hearted end boss and that it's not all coins and one-ups. She was beautiful. She was young. She was innocent. She was the greatest piece of ass I've ever had, and I've had them all over the eight worlds. And then Toad comes along with his mushroom hat and ability to pick vegetables out of the ground faster than anyone. And she runs off. She threw it all away just to make me look ridiculous. And a transvestite bird that shoots eggs out of its mouth in my position can't afford to be made to look ridiculous.
And we're back.
Hope those bits were everything you'd hoped for and more.
Well, they certainly were bits.
Yes, they certainly was.
We have some mail. We actually don't have a ton of mail this week, but that's fine because we have some things we need to discuss.
Yeah,
but
we don't need mail.
Well, I mean, I like getting mail, and I always encourage people to send us mail at podcast@algar.com or our voicemail 206-973-3982. God, I'm such a whore.
No, you did that well. That was good.
Yeah. Well, I have the number posted here because I forget it sometimes.
Yes, I saw that when I was over.
Yeah, I have edited out a number of times me giving out my actual cell phone number on the show, and I can ignore a call very easily. It wouldn't really bother me, but I probably shouldn't do that.
No.
Anyway.
Like, who wants to hear from one of our fans when you're trying to get stuff done?
Yeah. Well, I'm always trying to get stuff done, Matt. You know me.
I know. God, I know.
I am push, push, push. I don't know. That's the thing I heard on the Twilight Zone. Push, push, push.
Is it?
Yes.
A man obsessed with getting shit done.
No, it was a guy, you know, the modern world, and he wanted to get away from the modern world, and then he jumped off a train and killed himself. It was awesome.
I mean, that's
it was one of my favorite ones.
Away from the modern world, but
now the guy, it was great. It was, and I'm giving away a twist. Sorry, but everyone else has seen the show except for me already, so it doesn't really matter. It was about this guy who kept like riding the train home, and every time he went back to this old sort of 1800s village where everything was quiet and not modern, and he was so happy. And then he went there to stay, and it cut from a different POV, and he had jumped off the train to his death.
Wow,
it was awesome. I loved it.
So, you know, don't do that.
That's how you get away from the modern world.
I mean, I guess you have a point there, yeah.
Jump off a train. Fucking adapt or die. That's
have
that...
you tried suicide?
Yep. It's weird, I actually got a hold of these Twilight Zone radio dramas. I was at a used bookstore and I found these CDs and they were almost no money at all. They made these like 5 years ago. It's fairly recent. And they adapted a bunch of scripts from the show with not celebrities, but people you've heard of.
Sure.
The like, chick, well, the chick who played Tootie from Facts of Life did one.
Really?
Tootie. John Schneider, who I think was one of the Duke boys.
Yeah, I know that name from somewhere.
Stacey Keach is the host. He's actually a guy I've heard of.
Oh, I like Stacey Keach.
Yeah, me too. And there, you know, there's others. I got this particular one because Adam West was involved, and I thought, I honestly thought this would be a cheesy goof. I thought
this will be good to talk about on the show.
This will be funny, and I'm always looking for new audio stuff for us to kind of mimic in sketches or make fun of or whatever. And I got it, and it's actually quite well made. It's actually really well done. They've modernized the stories to some extent, and they're actually really good. I heard the first one, and again, these were only produced about 5 years ago. It's 2007. And I was worried because Adam West sounded really bad at the beginning of this one. Like, he's shaky and like, I don't know. And I'm like, oh, God, are they just reaching out to a sad old man? Is he done?
Was he smacking his lips a whole lot?
No.
Sitting in the dark?
No. It wasn't. That's what I'm saying. He actually sounded infirmed. Like, dying. And the story ends up being about an old guy who gets younger, and then by the end he sounds like he did on Batman.
Wow.
So he was acting. He fooled me with his acting. I was legitimately worried for Adam West's health.
Congratulations, Adam West. You have fooled me twice.
Yes. Shame on me. No, I was really impressed. I didn't think he had it in him to really convince me he sounded like an old man who'd had a stroke.
Yeah.
But he totally, and I was thinking, I know I've heard him, on Family Guy and on some other thing. Like, I know he's not this bad off, is he? I guess so. Nope. Just acting.
I mean,
I felt like...
When I think of the word actor, I certainly don't picture Adam West.
No. I mean, he's, he's great. But he's great at being Adam West.
Yeah, exactly.
What I really felt like is, to bring this back to trains again, I felt like those guys you read about when movies first started. And they watch the movie of the train coming toward them, and they panic because they thought the train was going to hit them. You know what I'm talking about? You've heard that?
I totally know what you're talking about.
Yeah. When silent films first started,
uh-huh.
There were those people who just freaked the fuck out because they thought a train was coming for them.
Oh, my God!
Yeah, and that's what I felt like. The made-up thing really fooled me. I feel like kind of an idiot now. But at least I didn't jump off the train to my death.
You're like those guys that were actually genuinely terrified of War of the Worlds.
Yes! That is another good comparison. That is exactly... We know a remote farm.
Oh, my God!
Yeah.
Head for the hills! This guy knows a remote farm!
The other thing I wanted to mention quickly is we talked about this. Someone wrote in and suggested that after I finish Twilight Zone, I try Night Gallery.
Night Gallery.
Which you brought, you came to visit and you brought me the first season. And I watched the first couple and, not very good.
Now, is there any, how does this, differ from the Twilight Zone?
It's longer.
Because it's my set of Night Gallery, and I was looking forward to watching it.
There may be some good stuff on there. I've started watching in order, and the first two, I think, may have been pilot episodes, and maybe they weren't fully formed. Mm-hmm. But the directing was kind of clumsy. Seeing it in color really kind of, I tried not to compare it to Twilight Zone exactly, because I know it's more horror and less.
Right, but you did just come off of watching the Twilight
Zone. Yeah, over 130, 150 episodes. But I'm watching, and they had, one of them was actually directed by Spielberg, sort of early in his career. And it had Joan.
Oh, right, I think whoever was written in mentioned that.
Yeah, and it had Joan Crawford in it, in one of her last appearances. Joan Crawford is the woman they made Mommy Dearest about.
Right, no more wire hangers.
Yeah, that's her. But this is the actual woman, not the fictional character.
Oh, God.
And Tom Bosley, the dad from Happy Days. Mm-hmm. It was really melodramatic and just over the top and not scary. And you could see some of Spielberg's sort of talent in there. But, it's about a blind woman. What's her name? Played a blind woman. And
sure.
There's some really artfully done stuff where you're seeing sort of from her POV and it's just her and everything is black around her.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
And no, it's that part's well done, but the rest of it, just the basic storytelling of it, not very good. It's very, I think the problem is TV in the 70s is very dated to the 70s, mm-hmm. whereas TV in the late 50s, early 60s is sort of timeless in a weird way, you know what I mean?
Well, it's old enough that it's sort of become
right
timeless.
And they made contemporary references, but it didn't really feel like the late 50s, early 60s.
Sure.
Whereas this so completely felt like 1974 or whatever it was.
Uh-huh.
And in a bad way, in a real bad way. There was the other one I watched had, I believe, Roddy McDowall. Not Malcolm McDowell, the other one.
The less cool one.
The one that was, I would say the more cool one. He was in Planet of the Apes and he's not a joke now. Malcolm McDowell is totally a joke now.
I mean, yes, but.
I would go as far as to say he is the British Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, I would go so far as to say that, too.
He used to be a badass, then he was a sandwich actor, and now he's just a joke. But it had basically this guy waiting for someone to die, like an old person to die, so he could get his inheritance. And it just went on and on and on.
That's a plot to every Tales from the Crypt that's not about killing your husband or wife.
Yeah, and it's the plot to quite a lot of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, but they usually found a new spin each time so that it was good. That's a good anthology show, Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
All I have to do is wait for you to die.
Yeah, but
then I'll have access to your vast fortune.
He's always talking to the butler who's but it's set in New Orleans and it's a black dude in a tux.
Oh.
So there's this whole racial undercurrent. Yeah, don't jump to Willikins. There's this whole racial undercurrent to it.
There's supposed to be a racial undercurrent?
No, not really. And in fairness, he doesn't call him boy. There's no, he just happens to be the butler, and he actually ends up on top at the end, so it's okay.
Well, good for him, then.
Yeah, it's not, I guess, I don't know. I don't know what racist is anymore. They don't treat him like he's an inferior. They just treat him like that's his job.
Right. But there's no reason a black guy can't be a butler.
Sure.
Benson.
But it's, the character's name, the butler's name is Portafoy.
That is a fuck of a good butler name.
It is. The problem is, Roddy McDowall proceeds to say Portafoy at the end of every sentence he addresses to the character, to the point where he completely runs the name into the ground.
Okay, no, you know what? I am completely okay with that.
That'll be all, Portafoy. Now I'm going to have my dinner, Portafoy. Let's go over here, Portafoy. Hey, Portafoy, what are you doing, Portafoy?
Portafoy.
And it just... Portafoy. At first, I thought he was calling him, Porter Boy.
Porter
Boy. I thought there was a boy in there. I thought it was being a little racist. But nope, just Portafoy.
Portafoy.
So fine, whatever. But it's those two episodes I've seen so far just not great, which is unfortunate.
That is unfortunate.
But I'll check out a few others. There's one based on a Lovecraft story that I might be all right. I don't know.
That's cool.
We'll see. Anyway, enough about all that. Let's answer some mail.
All right.
We have one from Mike X here, and he says, hey, Matt and Al, and possibly Flonk if he's there. He's not, but I just saw that he just signed on Skype. We could go get him if you want.
I mean, I guess. Yeah, if he's not doing anything.
Nah. Eh.
Nah.
I would have to hang up. That's too much effort.
You know what? It's not worth it.
No. If he can hear us somehow through some weird crossed wires, then he's welcome to answer.
But... Flonk, if you're listening to this, feel free to yell at your iPod.
I can see you right there on my buddy list. I know you're near.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah, hey, buddy. It should be called the I'm Not Your Guy list. I did indeed find Sarcastic Voyage through Al's hugely entertaining Transformers reviews. Oh, thank you. As opposed to Matt's less entertaining Gem and the Holograms reviews. Yeah, Matt, those were terrible.
I know what they
were. I'm also from the 80s. I like that he says it like that. I'm from the 80s.
Hey, me too.
So I've got a lot of nostalgia for the Transformers, a lot of distrust for later generations of the property. I'm not quite sure why I should have warm feelings for the cheesy original show and angry feelings for the cheesy knockoffs, but we humans are less logical than our robotic counterparts, or at least the robotic counterparts that aren't voiced by Frank Welker or Chris Latta. Yes, you are correct. My question is somewhat related. Have you guys heard of the book Robopocalypse by Daniel Wilson? I read it last year, found it entertaining and a little scary. Basically, the end of the world arrives when a sentient AI raises an army of malevolent machines. So since a lot of people have a zombie plan, you guys have a similar plan for the machines rise up and start killing everybody. More than meets the eye, Mike.
I've seen copies of this work.
Mm-hmm.
I've counted them many times in my pre-dawn work hours.
Well, yes, and you occasionally refer to the horrible gray skies as a robot apocalypse morning.
I do. There's a very specific type of weather that is a robot apocalypse morning. It's gray and horrible and usually raining.
A grade A gray day?
A grade A gray day.
Right.
I don't have a plan for a robot apocalypse other than being picked apart by giant metal spiders from my necessaries.
I would like to think that I would be spared because I have been nothing but pro-robot all along. I have been the herald of the robot apocalypse. I have been, you know... I've been a cheerleader for them from as early as I can remember.
See, this is my thing with the robot apocalypse. I mean, like, there's no way they're going to spare you, because what's the point of keeping you? What exactly can you do that a robot can't do better?
Dream?
Is that it? Are they going to keep you to dream?
No, my dreams are stupid.
Are they going to keep you to be in love because love is something robots can't feel?
Don't give me this Roddenberry crap now. Come on. You know better than that.
I know that robots can't feel.
I think that they can.
All right.
I think, you know, as Mike correctly points out, I think, you know, robots are totally capable of feeling emotions. I mean, Starscream was constantly pissed off and jealous.
That is an emotion.
Angry. As far as I know, it is, yes. I feel like I could make jokes. I could like be their jester. Maybe I could, I don't know, sarcastically talk about how their plans to drill to the center of the earth are horrible.
And sneak off when they get drunk on Energon cubes.
Yeah, exactly. No, I offer a wide variety of, robot. What do you call it? Commentary options.
Yeah.
I'd be their narrator.
Oh, sure.
They're going to need a narrator.
Listen, you guys are good. You guys don't know it yet. You're going to need a narrator.
Yeah. Also, they...
Check this out. Cosms entered the room striding over a...
Yes. Also, they need someone to tell that they're obese because my Wii Fit is a robot and it always tells me that I'm obese. And, you know. If there's only robots, then nobody... They don't have body image issues. They don't care. You can't be passive aggressive to a robot. You need a human to direct that at. And I volunteer.
Optimus Prime, you look like shit.
Yeah, no, you can't say you look like shit. You have to subtly sort of, oh, you haven't lost that much weight. Why do you think that is? Like, the Wii Fit is super passive aggressive. I mean, this is a thing I've been talking about literally since the first episode of this podcast. This is not new.
Your Wii Fit's such an asshole.
All of them. Not mine. All of them. It's an army. It's part of it's the first wave of the robot apocalypse, I think. Also Roombas, also what else?
Like, actually that's it. Wii's and Roombas. We're doomed.
No, because I also think there's those self checkout things at the grocery store.
Oh sure, those are
Robots.
Those are insidious.
There's a stand up, I think it was Patton Oswalt actually referred to them as robots the first time.
Yep.
That's not my idea, but he made me realize, yeah. They are robots, aren't they?
And that's how this works.
They talk to you.
Yep. I notice you're buying a lot of alcohol. Do you want to talk about it?
Are you trying to dull the pain of existence? Why, yes, I am.
Activating Hugbot.
Oh. Yeah, see, you can't hug another robot. They need someone to hug, and I would be that guy.
Don't you want somebody to hug?
Next email here comes from Richard, and it is, oh, referring to your recent death, Matt.
Yes.
I don't know if you can remember, or if the listeners remember, that you died.
I did die recently.
Richard remembers, and he has actually composed a song in your honor.
Richard remembers.
So let's hear that now.
Matt, we're sorry that you died. You used to be here, now you're on the other side. Oh, Matt, we're sorry that you died. Matt, we hardly knew you, then you heard the call of Cthulhu. Matt, we're sorry that you died. Oh, you used to be a host, and now you're just a ghost. Oh, Matt, we're so sorry that you died.
That may be one of the coolest things to have ever come from.
Yeah, I mean, we often engage in hyperbole. We like what our listeners do. We like our friends. But I can honestly, unqualified, no exaggeration, say that is one of the coolest things.
That was pretty awesome.
That was goddamn amazing. Thank you for that, Richard.
Yeah, thanks.
I almost wish Matt was actually dead now just to live up to that song.
Hey, now I got something to play at my funeral, so.
Wow.
Al is the executor of my will, by the way. I need you to make sure that happens.
Oh, man. And now there's a public record of it. I figure, well, hey, he said a lot of stuff, but you can't prove it.
And also, if you want access to my vast fortune, you need to spend a night in a haunted house.
Oh, man. But Portafoy is going to try to cheat me out of it.
Well?
Damn it, Portafoy.
Again!
All right. We now have some voicemails here, Portafoy. Which, several voicemails here, all from Pat McDonald. So let's hear the first of several now. Interestingly enough, he mentioned to me that he did remember calling us once. He does not remember calling us three times. So Pat may have a problem, but his problem is our delight. Let's hear the first
play the
one.
Clip,
Dear Sarcastic Voyage, going through my personal belongings here that I had in storage and found my Monty Python books that my dad gave me when I was a child. He had them since he was a kid, and I wanted to read you something from them. It's a Port Showin by the Spavorant Runer, and it goes like this. I have a Galton Harden in the country, an ace I call my plone, a treat I can replace to when I bead to me alone. Catterfly and Butterpillar perch on beefy lough, and I listen to the dats and cogs as they mark and they beow. Yes, wager here is nunderful. There is no weed for nerds. While filling by my window flutter viny little turds. I just think that's beautiful, and I wanted to share it with you guys. I'm sure you've heard it before, but hey, what the fuck. Good night.
That was beautiful.
That was absolutely gorgeous.
Not as beautiful as the Matt is Dead song, but...
Well, no, but what could be?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it looks like Pat sent two other things. I've listened to these before, two other things from the Python books, and I've read those books, and they're delightful, but I don't want a reminder that there are better comedians in the world than we, so...
That's a hard enough struggle without having to be reminded of it.
Yeah, and so, sorry, we're just going to leave it at the one. But rest assured, they're great books. The Monty Python Paperback and something else. I don't know, I own them, but I don't remember what they're called.
To learn more about Monty Python, consult your local library.
Yes, and if your local library happens to have a copy of Buck Alice and the Actor Robot by Walter Koenig, please, with that quote from Leonard Nimoy, please steal it.
Yeah, please feel free to steal it and mail it to us.
Yeah, exactly. I will pay your overdue fines.
Nuts here.
So that is actually all the mail we have, but we do have... Wow. Okay. Where to begin with this?
Yeah, this is...
Okay. Our pal Scott Zioko...
Yes.
Unfortunately, is not able to make it out to Emerald City this year. He's been out for the past 2 years, and it's unfortunate, but I understand. He's got a, you know, he's building an army of children.
Yep.
He doesn't have the resources to make it out again, and that's fine. He'll be missed, but it's cool. He is, however, promoting his comics work at some more local cons at venues there in Missouri where he lives. And it turns out in Columbia, Missouri, the same weekend that he's working, whatever con that it is that he's working, there's another convention across town. Matt, why don't you tell them what convention Scott wishes he could go to but can't because he's promoting his comic.
All right. 2012 marks the very first annual Werewolf Con.
Now, what is this exactly, Matt?
Now.
Is it what it sounds like?
It is exactly what it sounds like, Al. Werewolf Con is a meeting of werewolf enthusiasts from all over the world,
mm-hmm.
or at least all over North America.
Sure.
Or at least all over Missouri.
People who are willing to go to Missouri, which, not to belittle Mr. Zioko's home state, but not exactly near where things are happening.
No, it is, however, apparently the werewolf capital of the world, which is good to know.
Is that what they claim?
You know what? No, but I think they should start.
Well, it's very flat country out there, probably good for prowling around when you're a wolf.
Sure.
You know, nice unlight polluted skies, nice clear shot of the moon, I imagine. So, you know.
Which is vitally important.
Yeah, when you're in cities, when you're especially in a big, very densely, you know, populated city, you can't really see the moon. And that's important when you're a werewolf.
Well, I mean, especially if you're going by the Scooby-Doo rules of werewolves, that in that werewolfism only works if the moon isn't covered by something.
Oh, right, because a cloud would go over the moon and then he would turn back.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes total sense. Mm-hmm. Because the rest of it makes so much sense, and that's where it breaks down. These are people now that aren't fans of, say, movies or books with werewolves in them. But
I mean, I assume that they must be, but that's not what this is about.
Not necessarily, because as we've established in my robot reviews, I'm not a fan of humans.
Well, no.
In fiction, I would much prefer robots. So just because you are a thing doesn't mean you want to see a thing in stories.
No, but I mean, if you're going to Werewolf Con, I assume that you're at least vaguely familiar with...
Proud of your culture, I guess?
Yeah, sure.
Is it a culture? I don't know, because you seem to just be celebrating this is the way I was born. It's like going to a gay con.
Yeah, like, if...
That doesn't really... Just why don't you just hang out with other people that are like you? Why go to a... You know, if you're just treating it as a thing that you are...
I mean...
And not as a thing you're pretending to be...
Let's look at this, okay.
All right, we really got to break this down.
Werewolf Con is an education... This is from the website.
Okay.
Werewolfcon.com will be in the show notes.
Yes.
If you can't remember that. Werewolf Con is an educational organization dedicated to creating awareness of and appreciation for werewolves, therians, shifters, and otherkin. We celebrate the historic and ongoing contributions of all things related to the culture and belief.
So it is a culture.
Yes.
So it's not just a biological condition. It's actually... They've actually built a culture around being a werewolf.
See, the thing is, and someone sent me a link to this, and I don't remember who it was. I think it was Dave, actually.
Mm-hmm.
About the actual biological werewolf disease.
Well, I know there is some condition that causes people to grow hair.
Grow hair everywhere.
Sure. But, you know, that's...
That's not... Unfortunately, that's not what this is.
That's just called being Italian, right?
Moving on. No, this is people who apparently genuinely believe, or at least feel they have an affinity for, werewolves.
Now, because they claim to be an educational organization, mm-hmm. I imagine you or I, the non-werewolves in the world, you're not a werewolf, right? I don't want to speak for you there.
No, you would know by now.
Well, see, I might, but we don't actually spend large amounts of time, concentrated time together, I think. Honestly, you staying at my house this past weekend was the longest period of time we spent continuously together. You could easily hide a secret identity or a werewolf transformation or something.
I mean,
you know.
Yeah, but you know, we've also been doing this show for over 2 years now, and I would like to believe that...
Yeah, but you have a pretty busy schedule. You could very easily, like, every week we go over when you got to work, when you got this going on, when you got family time, when you got girlfriend time, and we make sure we block out some time that's, you know, that's open. You could very easily just hide your... I'm a werewolf right now under, I got to go hang out with my family, and I would never know.
Yeah, but no, my point is this, though. If I was a werewolf, I would bring it up on the show on one of those episodes where we were bereft of ideas.
Well, I suppose that's true. You mean all of them?
Because it's just easy. Oh, by the way, I'm a werewolf.
Yeah, no, that would be, we would have to make a whole issue out of that. We would have to make a whole, like, Matt comes out.
Yeah.
Do you call it, what would it be, like, coming out of the litter? I don't know, how would you refer to that?
It's a very special occasion known as the howling.
Of course it is. There's no lycanthropy pun here.
You literally burst out of a closet through the door into a room full of your family and friends and start howling at people.
Ah. But see, one presumes it would be hereditary.
I mean, one presumes that, but one could be mistaken.
I mean, granted, most of what I know about werewolves comes from Teen Wolf, and that actually, as we have long established, was about wolfmen, not werewolves.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, that is a hereditary wolfman. But I mean, there's also the, transfer through bite.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I forgot about that.
That was, you know, that's sort of the main one.
Yeah, I forgot about that. So they have a con.
They do have a con.
And it's not just werewolves, but it's also, what were the other things you mentioned?
Let's see. Therians, shifters, and other kin.
All right, let's go over these one at a time. Therians.
Yeah, Therians is the only one that I was... That, like, I certain should...
Weren't they the bad guys in Space Quest 1?
I think so, yes.
No, that was the Sarians, but...
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah. So, a Therian, we looked this up, apparently is some kind of a marsupial. Like a pouch animal. Something that carries its young in a pouch. Mm-hmm. So it seems to be like pouch fetishes.
Now, I've been around the internet long enough to completely understand the fact that people would not only want to, like... You know, not only want to be werewolves, but also be werewolves with pouches.
Yeah, it's like wouldn't it be like a furry with cuddling? I mean, I guess. That's not that weird.
No.
All things considered.
I mean, if on the big list of weird shit we've seen on the internet, no, that's not that weird.
No, not at all. This is fairly low. But then you have, what else is it there? Shifters? What's a shifter?
I assume shifters is just people turning into other stuff. And I mean, that's a huge...
Well, they did that in, I know, True Blood. I stuck with that ridiculous show for at least the first season, and then I couldn't anymore. But yeah, they had people, they had and we've talked about this too, like were-geese.
Oh, sure.
Like, wear marmosets.
No, the shifter thing I get. I've spent enough time around DeviantArt to see stuff like that.
Sure. But those are people who think that they're fictional characters, not that they actually turn into things their own selves.
Right.
So, if they happen to schedule this thing during a full moon, and I don't, unfortunately, know off the top of my head when this thing is happening, if there is a full moon or not.
It'll be easy enough to find out what with the site's handy phases of the moon chart at the side here.
Yeah, the thing is, if I'm a werewolf, I hope that I would already know that.
I mean, you would think so, right?
I wouldn't need a website to suddenly say, by the way, we have the technology to know when the moon is full. Because you think you'd have that sorted out. Like, if you're a woman and you have a period every month, you kind of figure out when that's going to happen and try and plan around it. It's just that it makes sense. If something is going to inconvenience you or in some way impact you, you want to know about it. And I can't imagine you need someone else to tell you that.
And how annoying would it be to have both a period and be a werewolf?
Well, I've read...
You would not get anything done.
I've read that that the whole werewolf thing sort of comes from that. Like, it's some kind of a weird metaphor for once a month you're transformed and blah, 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 and your hormones and so forth.
There's a whole Alan Moore Swamp Thing story about that, I remember.
Yeah, I think so. Actually, it's odd that you say you get nothing done because... there was a Kids of the Hall sketch where they talk about menstruation and how the guys are sitting around talking and I wish I had a period. It would really help organize your life. You get so much done. But I'm trying to think, if there is a full moon during this thing and you go in there at night, like into the convention hall or wherever this thing is, I don't know. I don't know Columbia, Missouri, but would it just be a menagerie? Would it just be full of animals?
I mean, you would hope so, right?
Wolves and whatever the shifters turn into?
Wolves, geese.
Others?
Others.
I don't know.
What, the guys from Lost?
I'm a were-platypus.
So I'll make an omelet out of my eggs.
Wow.
That's a callback, son.
It is, but I'm also thinking, like, if you're a human and then you turn into something that lay eggs, that's just even weirder.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much to go. There's this rabbit hole, and you could be a were-rabbit, I suppose.
Yes.
Now, would the were-rabbit, would the werewolves chase the were-rabbits, or would they understand we're all humans, it's cool?
Now I want to see werewolves chasing a mechanical were-rabbit around a ring.
What if, like, it, British dudes were on, like, a fox hunt, and then the fox turned back into a human?
Oh, and then he bit, like, one of the hunters. Now you've got a Twilight Zone.
Or if you say Portafoy 17,000 times, you have a night gallery.
Or if he rips them to shreds, you've got a Tales from the Crypt.
You got to have some puns in there, too.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
It seems he was acting a little foxy.
Oh, God. Stop it.
And that's why I don't write for that show. That's been canceled for like 10 years.
That's why, yes.
That's exactly why.
So, okay, Werewolf Con. And again, these are not werewolf enthusiasts. These are people who truly believe
that they are werewolves.
That they are werewolves. This we talked about this before the show to kind of collect our thoughts, and I think we decided this is worse than furries.
I mean, look, I get furries.
Yeah, I'm not into it, but okay, you're into a thing. You find a thing attractive, you find it sexually appealing, that's what you're into. That's fine.
That's cool.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with that. We've said that from day one too.
Oh, totally.
That's been something we've always said, but this doesn't even have anything to do with sex, and therefore is inexcusable to me.
Yeah.
Because, listen, if you want to fuck it, that's fine, but if you just think you're a wolf, that's weird.
Yeah. Like, I was thinking about this when you were talking about, you know, if it gets to be midnight at the con, and I'm thinking, if it, you know, night rolls around and it is a full moon, is everyone just going to look at each other and feel awkward?
Well, I just assume that they can't be lying. I mean, there must be tourists there. There must be
people. Oh, sure. And people, they get ripped to shreds. I've seen that Tales from the Crypt, too.
Or, I don't know, maybe they're just hanging out. Or, maybe they cook them. Maybe, what if there's like a cannibal, like somebody who's really into long pig who can't, you know, you can't legally eat a person.
You can't.
As much as you want to, as much as you crave long pig, you can't have it. But if you go to one of these conventions and it's full moon and they all turn, you could cook them and you're eating a person.
And not your species.
It might taste like goose or fox or platypus or whatever, but it's, you know, it's a person.
Yep. And that's what counts.
That's your way around it. That's really clever. I salute you, Cannibal at the Werewolf Convention.
You've got your shit all figured out, don't you? Things are coming up, Cannibal at the Werewolf
Convention. Okay, now here's the problem, though. If you have the werefox and the werechicken and the wereworm, you can't carry the wereworm and the werechicken across the boat at the same time. You have to leave the werefox behind first. That's a whole nightmare. And then they turn back, and then, you know, you can't do it. It's a puzzle. It's a, you know.
Or, I mean, you could just wait until they all turn back to normal and take them over all at once.
Yeah, but then, again, you're stuck with eating humans, which is, you know, morally wrong and ethically wrong and, of course, against the law.
My real question is, what do you do about the were-scorpion riding on your back?
Ooh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Also,
It's all like, well, what did you expect? It was in my nature. Yeah, but you weren't a scorpion at the time, you prick.
Wait, did you just quote the Crying Game?
What?
There's a whole thing in the Crying Game where they're talking about the scorpion stings somebody and it's in my nature. And it's just,
Yeah. That's not from the Crying Game. I mean, it might be from the
Crying Game. No, it's a myth. It's an old, like, you know, folktale or whatever, but they quoted it. It's a central part of the Crying Game.
Yeah, no, I've never seen the Crying Game.
Ah, well, the dude is a chick.
Oh, shit. Well, thanks.
Yeah, no problem. I'm just spoiling everything left and right here.
And he was a chick, or he was a guy, and also he had a sled.
No, turns out it's man. It turns out it's man. But I'm trying to. I'm really trying to work this out. These people really think they turn into stuff, and I guess if you're going to step out and assume that they're wrong for some crazy reason, like you're being a skeptic, Matt. You're really being a naysayer here.
Yeah, I never expected that I'd be the Scully of this relationship.
I know, but there you go. I even got the hair. Mm-hmm. But so assuming that they're mistaken, then yeah, you're right. It's just going to be a bunch of awkward looks.
Yep.
And then what?
I can just see the... Oh. So you're not actually a... No.
You either, huh? Nope. Want to go to the Gap?
Yes, I think you better had.
Now, see, I don't know. Maybe it's like those doomsday cults who are like, the world's going to end tonight at midnight, and then it doesn't, and then what happens then?
I assume the guy in charge who has all the money has already run away.
Yeah, but the people who are left there who believed it, who really thought they were going to be scooped up by the Lord or whatever.
I mean, that seems really embarrassing. This is why I don't believe in anything or take part in social gatherings.
Because of embarrassment.
Yes, exactly.
Because there's some British thread in you that is just horribly embarrassed.
No, you certainly can't have that.
Well, that's a very, very British, you know, and there have been a lot of English comedians over the years that address that. There's a bit in one of the Hitchhiker's books where he's talking about being in a train station and he's got a packet of biscuits and he reaches for one and eats it. And then the guy sitting at the table, you know, a total stranger sitting at the table, reaches over and eats his biscuit. Like, what are you? And I can't say anything because I'm English. So I eat another one. And then he eats another one. Back and forth. And then he gets up and leaves. And I just don't know what to say because I'm English. And then I look down and my packet of biscuits is there unopened.
I love that story.
Yeah, me too. And it's got a nice Twilight Zone twist to it. And then your glasses break and you're a werewolf.
Picture a man with a basket of biscuits.
A packet of biscuits.
A packet of biscuits.
A basket of biscuits. What is wrong with you?
I don't...
Biscuits do not come in a basket.
A biscuit, a basket.
Now, here's the thing. This is totally unrelated, but I've always wondered if Sesame Street in the UK, if Cookie Monster is actually called Biscuit Monster.
I mean, they must have a type of cookie over there, right? Maybe he only eats like a very specific...
But they don't have cookie, I don't think. I think they call them biscuits.
Huh.
I don't know. Anyway, we're getting off the topic here.
If anyone over there is from England, and we know that you are, tell us what Cookie Monster's like over there.
Yeah, because otherwise we'll have Nick and Willikins make something up and it'll be terrible.
Oh, no, he's Biscuit Monster.
Om nom nom, sir. You need your eyes to be googlier.
Here, I'll hit you in the back of the head.
Oh, dear. But we're really getting off the topic here. I wonder if there are were-muppets. Like someone who turns into Cookie Monster at the full moon.
That'd be fucking awesome.
Wouldn't it? Your fur turns blue and your eyes go googly.
I mean, like, you change from a normal guy into, like, a Muppet?
Yeah. Why not? How is that any stupider
Why
than
not indeed?
Turning into a dog or whatever?
That would explode. I bet it happened to Vincent Price when Kermit bit him on the neck.
Could be. I don't know. Okay, now, when the shifters, you know, when werewolves and the others turn, do they change their mask? Because this is one of those sci-fi nerd things that I've always actually – I usually don't like it when the science nerds overguess things and kind of ruin, take the fun out of it. But they do make a good point when it comes to the mask thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing with, like, the Hulk.
Yeah, if you're say, a 200-pound grown man and you turn into a mouse – would you still weigh 200 pounds or what?
Where does that go?
And yeah, what is the deal with the Hulk? Does he increase in mass? What happens?
I've heard...
Does he have hollow bones like a bird?
I'm not a bird! I've heard explanations for this and I can't remember any of them right now.
Do they involve hammer space?
Sure, let's go with that.
That's how the Transformers and a bunch of other cartoon characters, there's a pocket in subspace.
Oh yeah. No, I know exactly.
Where they put their stuff.
I used to watch the anime that came from.
Yeah, that's Soundwave, the big tape player guy.
Sure.
Would turn into a portable tape player and then into a giant robot. And that's, he shifted his mass into hammer space.
Or like how Megatron could turn into a gun that could easily be held by someone else.
Yeah, exactly. And I assume hammer space is inside those massive pants that Hammer wears.
Sure.
He's got all kinds of extra mass in there, you know, in his pants, in his hammer pants.
Unfortunately, once you put something into hammer space, you can't get it out because you're not allowed to touch it.
Yeah, that is the not the riddle, the
conundrum.
Yes, Hammer's conundrum.
And you don't even want to know how many possibly dead cats are in there. Holy shit!
The problem is you can't know.
There might be dead cats in there for days.
Now I kind of want to make a parody, if you can't touch this, about quantum physics called You Can't Know This.
Can't know this. That's all I've got.
So why Columbia, Missouri? I feel like this is something Scott Siocco might have to tell us, or Shauna, because she's from the same area, or anybody else out there who might be in or familiar with Missouri. Why? Why there?
Yes.
If it's the first annual, then this is where they chose for the first time.
Is this like Werewolf Holy Land?
I mean, it is...
Sort of in the way that Transylvania is Vampire Holy Land?
It is very centrally located. Like, it's sort of the middle of the country. It might just be that simple. It might be everyone, you know, everyone can get here easily.
Every 100 years or so, all the werewolves in America converge on the middle of America?
That could be.
To have their dark rituals?
I don't think... It doesn't sound like there's dark rituals. It sounds like there's punch and pie.
No, it does sound like that. In my mind, everything has dark rituals.
Well, yeah, but in your mind...
That's the world I prefer.
But in your mind, Emerald City has dark rituals, and we're just there to talk about comic books.
Yep.
And hopefully get George Takei's autograph.
I like to believe that karaoke night is our dark ritual.
It's really not. It's kind of a light ritual.
Oh, shit, if Sioko's not coming this year, then who's going to kick off karaoke night?
I don't know.
My God.
I imagine there is someone in our massive group of jerks who can look like a jerk in public. I think that'll
be easy enough. Oh, man.
It'll be fine.
It changes everything.
Yeah, listen, Matt, we're wandering away from the werewolf thing here. Come on.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
I can't believe I have to tell you, of all people, stay on topic with werewolves.
Stay on topic.
Porkins is not a werewolf.
But what if he was? Now, they had a species of werewolves in Star Wars.
What? Did they?
Hanging out the bar.
Oh, right. So they did. Was he a werewolf, though, or was he just a wolfman?
No, I think he was a wolfman. That was what the action figure was called.
Right. The wolfman. Wolfman Jack.
Yep.
Yeah. I guess there's really nothing else to... Like, I figured we'd have a lot more to talk about with this, but people think they're werewolves, and that's fucking weird.
Yeah, I mean, like... What the hell? I keep being surprised that... I am surprised when I learn this stuff.
No, I know.
And I really shouldn't be. I've been on the internet long enough. I've seen some of the weird shit people get off on.
But again, this doesn't appear to be a sexual thing.
And like,
that's where I draw the line. It's like any weird sex stuff people are in, I don't... Like, I might get a laugh out of it, but I honestly, truly, when it comes down to it at the end of the day, I don't judge. Mm-hmm. I might think it's funny to look at because, you know, come on. We had a cover art of Worf embracing a flamingo.
Yes, and that was not commissioned by us. That was someone...
No, something we found because we were daring each other to find the weirdest fucking Rule 34 stuff we could.
Yep.
And we didn't even look that hard. We just looked for the hour we happened to be recording. But my point is, at the end of the day, while I might get a chuckle out of it, I don't judge anybody's weird sexual stuff as long as they don't hurt anybody. It doesn't bother me in the least, but this doesn't appear to be sexual in any way. It just appears to be, I think I turn into an animal once a month. What?
It's so weird what people, you know...
Now, maybe there is a subtext there that, you know, they're trying to be discreet about, which is that they are trying to hook up with each other. I don't know.
Which is fine.
Yeah, that would make it way less weird to me. If it's people trying to get laid, that suddenly is less weird to me.
I mean, I guess it's just the prevalence of conventions and how you can have one for everything now, you know?
Well, that's fine.
Like, as the internet's become more and more of a thing and these people are all finding each other, and instead of thinking that they're, you know, instead of, like, what would happen in the old days where you would just think you were crazy and go to a therapist, you know, people are finding each other and, you know, the first step is realizing that it's not actually, you know, that it's normal. Quotation marks. And the second step is hooking up, and the third step is probably banging.
Yeah, but you could say that about us, like nerd culture. Not us. We're not banging. Don't read that into this. For Christ's sake, Scott.
Oh, God.
Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
No, what I'm saying is...
It feels like it's a rite of passage now for a podcast to shout... To talk about how we're not gay to Scott. I've heard that on so many different podcasts now.
Well, you know, I don't know how to respond to that.
That's fine.
In any case, what I'm saying is we nerds have found each other through the internet. We have gathered, we hook up with each other. I mean, the people that you and I are currently involved with now, we met on the internet.
Indeed we did.
And we bonded over the shared nerd interests that we had, and you know, it's basically the same, except we don't think we're werewolves. That's where it's different.
Yeah. I mean, My biggest thing about this is how serious they take themselves.
Well, that's where they lose me, because I am always willing to make a joke about us being into stupid crap.
Like, I mean, look, I can kind of, in a world where I genuinely thought that I was a werewolf, I still couldn't take that seriously.
No, and honestly, I think one of the big reasons you and I do an entire podcast about Star Trek is because we have devoted so much of our life and our mental energy into thinking about this thing a little seriously, and I think it helps us to not take it seriously. I think we feel better about ourselves that we can make jokes about it.
Yeah.
And I feel much less like a giant dork. I mean, I still feel like a dork.
Oh, sure. But I mean, like, that's your sort of natural...
But I'm getting comedy out of it, and that makes it much better than taking it seriously and really seriously thinking about...
Oh, yeah.
...what Captain Picard's up to this week. Instead, I'm making fun of what Captain Picard... Yeah, that's different.
Yes. That makes it all right.
No, seriously, though, like, you're absolutely right. Taking your subculture so incredibly seriously is a little strange.
That way lies incredible mocking.
It does. And that makes me wish we could go to WerewolfCon. Maybe next year we'll organize our big gathering.
Yeah, we'll just give Emerald City Con a miss next year.
And go to WerewolfCon. And just tell everyone to show up at WerewolfCon. Because, you know, like we said, Zioko can't make it to here every year. So we'll go to him. Well, we'll go to the werewolves, but he'll be there too.
Huh.
So maybe we'll do it. We probably won't do that.
No.
Actually. But, you know, I probably wouldn't set foot within 100 miles of there.
Well, no, because, I mean, what if you were devoured?
Yeah, I mean, that's a serious consideration. I don't have any silver. Plus, even if I did, I wouldn't have a silver bullet. And if I did, I wouldn't fire a gun because I'm a pacifist. So it's a whole thing.
And not even, won't even resort to violence to save yourself from being eaten by a werewolf.
No, that's what a pacifist is, Matt.
I know, I'm almost impressed.
It's, you know, it's the courage of your convictions to be killed by a werewolf rather than raise a hand at a werewolf.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, are there other ways to defeat them? Because if, you know.
I don't know, I mean, werewolves is pretty much just silver.
Are they subject to passive aggression? Because I got a Wii Fit that could totally protect me.
Boy, you're looking really shitty there, werewolf. Why do you think that is?
Yeah. Why don't you click one of these reasons? Yeah. So that's pretty much it. As far as that goes, I'm sure we could talk about this for hours, but we probably shouldn't.
If there are any werewolves out there listening to the show, please email us.
You listen, and if you want to be indignant, if you want to set us straight and say, look, you've maligned my people, this is a serious thing, convince us.
Yeah, please do. We would love to hear from you.
We are not anti-you. We are just skeptics. Mm-hmm. And we are willing to be swayed, so convince us.
Yeah, totally.
Please do. Write to us. podcast@algar.com or the voicemail 206-973-3982. Please do it.
Please.
Last bit of business. Our books have been sent off to the printer. They are being printed. It is not too late to pre-order them still if you would like to do that.
Yeah. Guys, I want to make this very clear. We wrote 2 books.
Yep. Published 2 books.
We wrote 2 books.
Yep. 2. Both of them.
Yep.
2 books. Different things. The first book is associated with this show. It is the Sarcastic Voyage Guide to Monsters and also Robots. Mostly monsters, though, unfortunately.
Mostly monsters.
Yeah, we'll get into that later.
Get into that in the book.
In fact, there's werewolves and wolfmen in there. So,
there are indeed.
So there's that among Draculas and Frankensteins and all the major class of monsters. Featured in their art by some really talented art people.
Yep.
Our pal Vishal did some amazing layout for the book and design. Just great stuff. And the other thing is an episode-by-episode guide to Star Trek The Original Series, published with the awesome Post-Atomic Horror logo, also done by Vishal.
Indeed.
So those books will be coming out shortly, and you can still pre-order them on our website, and the link will be there as always.
Yep.
And it is still not too late to come to Emerald City. We would love to see you there.
We absolutely would.
We have a table there. We're putting on a live show. It'll be great times. Yeah. Come sing with us. Come talk to us. Come buy our crap. Come yell at us. That would be fine.
I don't know if I can handle yelling.
It gets boring sitting at that table. After, like, Sunday, like, mid-afternoon when you're still there.
Yep.
Nobody's buying anything and everyone's packing up. You know, if someone came and yelled at you for making fun of werewolves, you'd probably be okay with it.
I'd probably be okay.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
I could use that distraction to slip away and look for discount comics.
Yeah, exactly. So all that is happening, and to all of you who have contributed, we greatly appreciate it.
You really have, you guys.
You have given us lots of money and time and effort and so forth.
We love each and every one of you.
Yeah. Especially you, that one person that I love the most.
Especially you.
Yeah. So that is all. We will be back in 2 weeks, and for now, we will stop talking.
This installment of the Sarcastic Voyage podcast featured Ron Algar Watt and Matt Robotham, with Chris Coleman, Pat Loika, and Amanda Smith. It was written by Ron Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, and Gav Brown. Visit sarcasticvoyage.com for show notes, related links, and alternate file formats. Listener feedback can be sent to podcast@algar.com or to the show's voicemail, 206-973-3982. The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is a trademark of Algar Productions, copyright 2012. Remember the old ways before Galvatron? Remember when we weren't trying to harness the power of a little boy's nightmares or exploit aliens with magic singing voices? Remember when we ruled Cybertron and we didn't live on a planet called Char? It's time to return to the old ways. It may seem like it's too late to make the right choice, but it's not. One robot still stands ready to take command, despite his handicaps.
I'm Starscream's ghost, and I approve this message.